Coming up next on Tech News Today, more information about Tesla's autonomous fleet of cars and its big announcement yesterday. Apple is working with home builders to build smart homes from the ground up. NBA is bringing one game per week, at least, to virtual reality. Earnings Palooza with Microsoft, Verizon, and PayPal all reporting today. And Nintendo unveils its new hybrid console, the Nintendo Switch. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1624, recorded Thursday, October 20th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/TNT and enter promo code TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT for 30% off your entire order.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything that happened in technology today. And I like to call us the dazed and confused of tech news.
Do you?
I do.
I've never heard this before, but I like it because it's a fantastic movie.
It is. It
really is. It's also a song by Led Zeppelin.
Oh.
But I was never a huge Led Zeppelin fan, and I know a few of you just unsubscribed from the show there.
Oh,
sorry about
that. I'm Megan Maroney, huge Led Zeppelin fan. Huge.
Yeah, obviously. I'm Jason Howell. I like Led Zeppelin. I appreciate Led Zeppelin. I just am not always in the mood for... You know,
Yeah, you did that well, though.
All right.
So shall we talk about technology?
Yep.
Just as the show started yesterday, the news broke that Tesla would build all of its cars with the hardware to at some point become fully self-driving cars. Now we've had some time to let that news really sink in. We thought it was worth discussing a little further. The Model S and the Model X vehicles with this new hardware are already in production, and you can order one now. Once the Model 3 goes into production, it will also contain this hardware. And as we said yesterday, the fully autonomous software packages will cost an extra $8,000. Now, that figure came from Engadget. Ars Technica says full self-driving capability is a $3,000 option at the time of purchase and a $4,000 option after the fact. Check the website at Tesla.com. It's a really complicated price structure. I could not figure it out. There's a lot of different options. Now, one thing we didn't note last night, but that probably doesn't come as much of a surprise, is that the new robot Teslas will not feature those unsightly cameras sprouting out of the top of the car like Google and Uber's self-driving cars, but they'll be built right into the sleek Tesla design. They also released a promotional video set to the tune of the Rolling Stones' Paint It Black for some reason. And I'll remind those that haven't thought about the Rolling Stones as much as I have in your life. Paint It Black is about a funeral.
Oh, you don't want that when you're Tesla and using it to tout self-driving capabilities. That's a really interesting facet of that announcement. Okay, so there's that, and I got to get over that. I couldn't imagine one of these Tesla vehicles with one of those little doohickeys on the top of the vehicle. So obviously Tesla's going to figure it out and build it into the vehicle. And that makes sense based on kind of the cool factor that is Tesla. And I think what I appreciate about this is Tesla's basically future-proofing its cars for the time when the technology is ready. So, I mean, from early on, they're going to have their vehicles, you know, capable potentially with the hardware to jump right into this. Obviously, the big hurdle is regulation and, you know, the regulation challenges not only countrywide, at least in the U.S., but state by state and all that kind of stuff. That's going to kind of slow things down. So who knows when this actually happens, but that's so cool that basically, I mean, anyone who buys a new Tesla is going to have the ability to have fully autonomous vehicle at some point.
Yeah, they will be ready. But the other news with this is do not expect to use your fully autonomous Tesla, if you want to drive for Uber or Lyft or any of those services, they will not let you, they say. So, I mean, that's partly maybe because of safety, but also because they're probably going to have their own. They've talked about having their own sort of lend out your Tesla kind of thing, which I'm still not really sure how that works. I mean, I'm guessing it would be like a Model 3, you know, the that they would use for that, because I can't imagine like Leo lending out his Tesla to someone to drive. But yeah, so don't, you can't use your Tesla and be an Uber driver.
Yeah, this was part of a blog post that Elon had, Master Plan Part Deux, back in July on the Tesla blog. We may or may not have talked about it on the show. I honestly can't remember.
If it's Tesla, I'm guessing we talked about it.
Yeah, but you know, part of what he was saying is, you know, these cars, they can be pricey. You can offset the cost based on the fact that you're only using your car 5 to 10% of the day, let's say. So that's 90% of the time your car is just sitting there parked. If your car is fully autonomous, you know, capable of that, then you could then go on to your phone, press a button in the Tesla app, and put your car to work while you're at work or you're on vacation, and offset the cost of your car by allowing other people to pick up rides and everything. They also said that, you know, in cities, major cities that don't have a critical mass of Tesla cars doing this, Tesla vehicles doing this, Tesla would have its own rideshare fleet. So it makes it's no surprise, you know, given that you can't use these with Uber and Lyft. It's prohibited in the terms of service, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Musk also said that a driverless Tesla would drive from L.A. to New York City by 2017.
Wow.
I mean, he must have meant by the end of 2017, because we're reaching 2017. But
yeah, that's how I interpreted that, is by somewhere within 2017, this is going to happen. That's crazy. I mean, the video more or less shows from the garage pulling out on its own, letting someone in, and going to the Tesla lot somewhere across town. It shows the entire travel from point A to point B. Super impressive stuff. It's the future. And by the way, Elon had said on Twitter that this announcement was the Model 3 Part 2 announcement. The Part 1 was, of course, the initial announcement of the vehicle. And somebody asked if there would be a Part 3, and Elon said, definitely. So there's more to come. Who knows what that'll be? Apple wants to push into the home automation world in a big way. One way it's achieving that is by working with home builders to integrate smart technology from the ground up. Apple's working with Lennar Corp, KB Home, and Brookfield Residential Properties to begin with to build Apple houses that utilize the HomeKit platform, along with thousands of dollars worth of compatible home products like smart locks, lights, even coffee makers. I mean, you can use your imagination there. Apple understands it's more difficult to retrofit existing homes than it is to build the homes with smart technology in mind. And home builders, of course, hope that Apple's attached name is going to raise the cool factor of these homes and, you know, justify the cost of building all this stuff in. VP of HomeKit, Greg Joswiak, says Apple wants to bring home automation to the mainstream. And this is one really great way to do it.
I want an Apple Home. I for sure do, because trying to do it yourself is difficult. I have tried. Like, there's just the amount of hubs and, you know, it's complicated. It's become less complicated with iOS 10. But, you know, it's why I love the Amazon Echo platform so much. You just plug in and it works. And then you get another one and it plugs in another room and it works. And, you know, now they also just released the Fire Stick today for $40, which has Amazon Echo remote capabilities. So there are other cheaper, easier ways than to set up, you know, this iHome. But, you know, if I could buy a house that was already set up, like, I for sure would do that if it were in my price range.
Yeah. I mean, what it really reminds me of is what Apple has been able to pull off in recent years in cars with, you know, with the connectivity in the cars for the longest time. As an Android user, you know, Android users, at least I was, very jealous of the fact that, you know, many vehicles came out with an option to work with iOS devices just out of the box. Apple made those relationships. People saw value in it. And so you could opt to pay extra to have your car or to have the right, you know, head unit put into it to allow it to basically speak the language that your iOS device does. And for the longest time, Android didn't really have as perfectly integrated, you know, feature set or ability as we do now with Android Auto. So it's a little bit better. I don't know how ubiquitous it is in comparison, but you at least have that option. So it reminds me of that. It's also really useful for keeping people locked into an ecosystem, right? If you sell them a car that works with iOS and you sell them a home that works with iOS, you know, with HomeKit and all that kind of stuff, makes it really difficult for someone to decide, I think I want to leave this platform, this ecosystem, because it's literally tied into your life, which could be a good or a bad thing, depending on your experience, I suppose.
It's true. Instagram is rolling out a new suicide prevention tool to help users anonymously report friends they think might be attempting self-harm or have an eating disorder. The tool is similar to the one we talked about a few months ago that was launched by Instagram's parent company, Facebook. Now, both services say they employ teams working around the world 24/7 to review the reports. Instagram told the Wall Street Journal that the teams will prioritize the most serious reports and respond quickly. The person reporting will also be encouraged to contact local emergency services immediately. And the person that is reported will receive a message that says, someone saw one of your posts and thinks you might be going through a difficult time. If you need support, we would like to help. So I think this is great. The difference the big difference with Facebook and Instagram is Instagram's users skew younger. Mm-hmm. And so this is getting, a lot of people who are in the risk of suicide or eating disorders are not using Facebook. And so it's great that Instagram is doing this also. No algorithms are going to be used. And they consulted many mental health experts to create the tool. And you remember we interviewed Ellen Hendrickson when the Facebook tool came out. She's a savvy psychologist, has a podcast. And what she said was it's well known that we are not good at responding when we think our friends are in trouble. We don't know what to say to them.
Sometimes we don't trust our intuition.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So this is an easy anonymous reporting tool.
Yeah, especially considering the fact, at least in the kind of the younger ages and users of services like this, I mean, social media really is like the modern day diary, right? Like, I mean, when we were younger, if you had a personal issue or whatever, like I didn't really have a diary, but if, you know, and you wanted to write it down, you wanted to communicate it, but not communicate it to the world, but just like get it down, you would put it into something that would be very private, right? It would be a diary. It would be your kind of safe place for sharing this. Well, nowadays, people don't share. I mean, people don't keep that in information internalized. You know, a lot of times those signals, that information, it gets shared in one way or another in social clues like this. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense, you know, to be able to kind of pick through those and detect and whatever. Although here it's not really an algorithmic thing.
No,
right?
Not at all. No, they say they're not using
it. Based on reporting.
Right.
Someone sees it and says, something's going on here.
Right. And so they're trusting that, if you're someone's friend, then you know the difference between just like, my lunch was horrible, I'm going to go kill myself, like someone who's really making a call for help. So that you could say like, hey, you know, that person doesn't usually say things like that. I'm going to report it.
Yeah. There's also the kind of conflicting part of this, which is the fact that social networks for younger people can actually be a kind of a poisonous place that can put them in that mindset. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You've got bullying, harassment, social pressure, all that stuff weighs very heavily in these environments. But at the same time, like that's just where users are. And so it's great to have tools in place to help with that too. So.
Right. I mean, yeah, when you're talking about helping eating disorders, I mean, some people will argue like, well, Instagram is really helping people get eating disorders.
Right. Yeah,
because,
exactly.
You know, you're constantly seeing all these photos that are maybe Photoshopped or cleaned up and you just think like, I need to look like that. I need to post a selfie that, you know, and I don't look good, that sort of thing. So I do think that it is, I don't think Instagram is causing eating disorders, but in this way they're helping and that's good.
For sure. One big way the virtual reality stands to gain more mainstream attention is by tapping into the passionate fan base of major sports. The NBA is committing to broadcasting at least one professional basketball game per week in virtual reality, thanks to a multi-year partnership with NextVR. An NBA League Pass subscription is required. That runs $200 for the year. Subscribers will get at least 25 games. I'm going to call it immersive video because it, you know, like we this topic comes up often where, you know, the terminology virtual reality is thrown about when in actuality, like there is a difference between virtual reality and immersive video. I'm guessing that's what this is. I found a video clip from 2015 from last year of kind of a test of this sort of thing. And if I think if you skip in a few minutes, you'll kind of see gameplay. It's a little choppy because I think they were doing motion capture or video capture of it and everything. But it starts out wide and then it brings you as the viewer, you know, basically courtside. And, you know, so there's nothing interactive with this necessarily. You're watching the game, but you're virtually there. So maybe that's the indication.
Yeah, so there's no commercials. Yeah, so that it makes you actually feel like you're there as if you bought the ticket.
Right. Even through all those boring parts of nothing happening.
Right. Can you use any VR goggles with this?
That's a really great question. I don't know exactly which platform. I'm guessing this is going to be accessible, you know, in the usual places, Cardboard, Gear VR. I couldn't find it, you know, and then, of course, the bigger, more, you know, console-like offerings like Vive and Oculus. Don't know about PlayStation VR, but I couldn't really find, at least in my poking around, which platforms are supported here. But I think this is important because, you know, when it comes to proving a new technology, something like virtual reality, sometimes it can be very hard to really kind of communicate that to someone in a way that's going to convince them the value or the benefit of it. Sports has a very rabid fan base. You know, they'll do anything to get closer to their events. And if this literally puts them courtside at their favorite sport to watch their favorite team, you know, they respect blackout dates. So there is that kind of downside in this. But I think that's a total win. I think it's going to be a really great, you know, offering, not only for sports, but also for like concerts and stuff. I think that'll be really cool.
Well, here's a tip for helping you keep your phone from combusting, whether it runs Android or iOS. Use an official charger. But how can you tell? Apple says many of the Apple chargers and other Apple products being sold in the U.S. Amazon store are counterfeit. The website Patently Apple says the Cupertino company has filed trademark infringement cases for selling fake power adapters and charging cables through Amazon.com. Representatives from Apple bought over 100 iPhone devices, Apple-branded power adapters, and charging cables and found nearly 90% of them were fakes. Some had missing components, inadequate insulation, and they could catch fire or electrocute you. Apple says these products could lead to risks to the public and, let's be honest here, to Apple's reputation, because now anytime a phone combusts, we are going to hear about it. So, yes, it's safer and also good for them because they don't want to fall into the Samsung boat in terms of bad reputation.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Amazon holds blame here, too, not just because they have a marketplace that many things are sold from or sold through, because there's a lot of products there. And I'm assuming it's, you know, difficult to police that 100, you know, all 100% of their products are not counterfeit or whatever. But because some of these adapters and cables were actually, quote, fulfilled by Amazon. So they need to be doing some due diligence on this stuff, too. If they're fulfilling those products, then that's them basically putting their seal of approval on it and saying, yeah, it's coming from us. You can trust it. I know when I see fulfilled by Amazon, I kind of think that. Maybe I shouldn't. But I see that and I'm like, okay, well, this is a little bit more official. It's coming direct from Amazon. I give it a little bit higher of clearance, I suppose.
Right, yeah. If I saw Apple charging cable and it was fulfilled by Amazon, I would think that was safe. The lawsuit targets Mobile Star LLC. It's not targeting Amazon. It's this company that was selling them through Amazon.
Right. And, you know, this isn't the only time we've heard about this specific kind of threat, if you want to call it that. Benson Luong is a software engineer at Google. And in the past year, he's kind of made it his mission to test out USB-C cables and everything like that, you know, because he discovered early on that USB-C, just as a charging technology, has the capability to actually fry electronic components if they're, you know, I don't know, produced improperly. And so he kind of goes through and he puts these reviews on the Amazon products, tests them. He even had at one point a USB-C cable fry his Pixel that he wrote those reviews on. So that put him out of the game a little bit. So, I mean, thankfully, there are some people kind of going through and policing these things, because sometimes in Amazon world, you don't actually know what you're getting. But, yeah, you could get a fried computer. Before we move on, I should just point out real quick, because I've got it here. This is the new Pixel XL. This is not mine. I wish that it was. This is Frederic's here. She got it delivered today. FedEx. It's the really blue model. This is like the identical of the phone that I will be getting in a week. For some reason, even though I ordered it the day of the announcement, during the announcement, I'm getting it in a week.
Well, I know she didn't. She ordered it several days later because she came and asked me, like I read online, that you're not supposed to order it from Verizon because you're not going to get the updates. Mm-hmm. And then that was, remember that story came out, and then a couple days after was a story that, no, you can, and that was after.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That was not too long ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, ordering it from Verizon versus Google Store. I mean, Google Store, just time and time again, year after year, there's always these weird kind of fulfillment issues when you buy these things. My word of advice, if you ever buy from the Google Store, do not bundle your products together. They will wait until the very last thing is there before they ship the whole entire thing. So if you're trying to get all of these things on the day they launch, if they're bundled in a single order, you're not going to get it until that very last thing is fulfilled, which could be a nightmare, mm-hmm. to, you know, if you have technology lust like many of us do. Up next, it's Earnings Palooza with Alex Wilhelm from Mattermark. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. It's for all you people who've gone through the mortgage process. You know how painful it is to get to that home, to go through all the paperwork, gather all that information. And all you people who don't know how painful it is because you haven't done it yet. Believe me, it's not that fun. But with Rocket Mortgage, they can help you in the process. Brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, powerful, and completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. So if you do hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork, you're not going to need to do that anymore. With Rocket Mortgage, you can share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button. That's going to help you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet or your Pixel XL if you are lucky enough to have one. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
Lots of tech financial news today, so we thought we'd bring in Alex Wilhelm from Mattermark to discuss. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So first, earnings. Three big companies reported earnings today. Let's start with Microsoft. After they released numbers, the stock jumped to an all-time high of above $60. That's the highest they've been since 1999. What do you attribute this to?
Well, it's definitely a big day for Redmond. I mean, if you go back in time, people used to discuss their share price being over $35 or over $45 a share as very important kind of thresholds. So to be over $60 is huge. I think today's results are essentially the market reacting to very strong cloud news from the company. So I haven't checked this stat, but I think 29% of its last quarter revenue came from cloud initiatives, which shows that the company is actually pulling off its move from on-prem single-cell software over to this kind of hybrid cloud feature that's been talking about for, I don't know, 5-8 quarters. I think there was doubt in the market, or at least some uncertainty about how well we'll be able to pull off that transition and how quickly. And today's results, I think, were in line with the upper end of expectations. And therefore, to see share price rise is not too surprising.
What about mobile? How does that factor in? They've kind of moved past the write-down now at this point?
They've moved past the write-down, but you're still seeing sharp declines in revenue from the phone group or phone business. I think it was a couple hundred million dollars this quarter, down from a lot more a year ago. I don't have the exact number in front of me, sorry. But mobile is essentially defunct on the smartphone side, but Surface did have a good quarter, up 35-40% year over year on the revenue side. But the company's forecasting declines for both in the current quarter, so fiscal Q2 17. It's not the world's best quarter for that, but they're not trying to emphasize that for obvious reasons. But Windows Phone, so far as I can tell, is, you know, on its last possible legs.
So Surface business was up 38%. What do you make of that?
Not surprised. I mean, the Surface Book is a great machine. Surface Pro 4 is the best Surface to date. I've used, I think, all of them but the Mini, which got canceled throughout the history of the project. This is almost kind of Microsoft getting to stand up and say we were right all along. Because if you go back to the original Surface, the Surface RT, it was called way back in the day, it was, you know, made fun of and mocked. And there was a big write down there too. But they kept plugging at it and throwing money into it until it actually finally paid off. And I now see Surface out in the wild, so got to give them points for that. Now they have to make back all the money they lost in the process, but they've certainly proven out the market category.
Yeah, and I mean, there are other competitors putting out Surface-like devices, and that's, you know, another good sign, I suppose. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Said Apple, ironically, and they're the company who's doing it. So there you go. Everyone's joining the little recursive stealing parade.
Yeah, it's just the way it is in today's mobile world. So Verizon posted declines in revenue and subscriber growth. How much of that do you think has to do with the kind of the pending, I was going to say upcoming, but maybe it won't happen, the Yahoo purchase? Or do you think that's going to change anything?
I don't think Verizon's own financial results will change its approach to the Yahoo potentiality. I think the recent chop over at Yahoo itself is the real issue there. So there's the hack. There's the NSA stuff. I mean, it's pretty bad for Yahoo's outward-facing corporate stature, especially when on its own earnings call, I think yesterday, its senior leadership didn't show up. So they're acting as if this is a done deal, and then it's going to move forward at the expected share price. Verizon is trying to pull on the brakes as fast as it can. At least that's what it appears. So Verizon missing its own revenue forecast by $1 billion. Sorry, missing the public forecast by $1 billion in the last quarter is not good. But given the scale of the Yahoo deal is much smaller than its own market cap and revenue, I don't see the two being too connected in the short term. So meh, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
So what about the recall of the Note 7? Does that have any effect on Verizon?
I've heard some numbers that it will. I don't have an exact number of the billions for you, but I think that we're going to see some follow-up from that across all players in the mobile space. I mean, when you have a mistake of that scale, and also that's relatively is there really precedent for this? You guys are better at mobile than I am. Is there any sort of market precedent for this happening at this scale to any mobile company like Samsung?
Nothing comes to mind, to be honest. I mean, this is a pretty huge recall affecting a lot of different players, is the fact that it's mobile and in all of these stores and kind of the premium device for that major player. I have nothing coming to mind to compare it to.
Yeah, I don't recall the TSA ever saying, if you bring this on the plane, we're going to put you in jail.
Right.
I mean, that is really, really, you can't just hack around that. That's like handcuffs or go home.
For sure.
So, no, but I wouldn't be surprised if any provider that sold the handset will take some headwinds for it, but I believe investors will forgive them. I don't think their performance will be impacted much by it because it's not their fault. You know, AT&T, Verizon, all these other carriers, they vet phones, but they're not in charge of actually building them. And so systemic risk of this sort is probably risked out by investors. And so I don't really expect that much of a decline for, you know, the actual carriers here in the US themselves.
So today is the Pixel release day, the Google Pixel. And of course, they have an exclusive, at least a carrier exclusive with Verizon. If you were to project forward, you know, as far as like the bottom line for how this affects Verizon's business, do you think this is going to move the needle much?
How much will it affect Verizon's bottom line? I'll go with 7. 7 what? I don't actually know, but I'll go with 7. I mean, I feel like Google's putting a lot of money right now behind the Pixel, you know, front page ads, buying a lot of ad buys around the internet. I can't decide if they're trying to put out a flagship Android phone to show off the OS, or they're actually trying to go for mass, you know, consumer adoption. If it's the latter, it could have a real impact for people like Verizon on their sales side. But I'm not entirely convinced yet what that looks like.
Yeah.
And again, we could speculate all day, but what I would love to see are some actual hard numbers. And, you know, yet I give people points. They're releasing this phone in the wake of the recall we just discussed. So if they were looking for a great time to go into the market that already exists, this is it.
Sure.
So we can kind of also view sales numbers here as a barometer for consumer interest in upper-end devices post the Samsung meltdown.
Yeah.
PayPal also released earnings. They said Venmo contributed significantly to growth. I was surprised that PayPal owned Venmo. This was something I didn't know. Is that on purpose because like PayPal is an old person thing and Venmo is like for the millennials?
I was going to make a joke that the millennials were saving PayPal's bottom line, but you beat me to it.
Oh, sorry.
I feel like PayPal and Venmo are very, very distinct brands and they haven't tried unification probably for that reason. Venmo is a really cool product. People use it. You know, even the kids, I hear, use Venmo back and forth. PayPal sounds like that thing your grandmother uses sometimes on eBay back in 97.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to the team. I love PayPal. People use it. It's a huge business. It makes a lot of money. It's great. But it's not cool. Venmo, on the other hand, is an effective tool that is viewed as at least cool-ish by millennials. So I'm not surprised to keep it separate. But good on PayPal for owning Venmo, right? That was very prescient. I think if they had tried to build that similar product on top of their own platform, it would have failed due to complexity inherent to PayPal. So I think it's cool. And I think they're forecasting $2.92 to $2.99 billion for current quarter revenue, which is just a huge amount of money. So even as eBay struggles post-split, PayPal seems to be doing very, very well.
Okay, so one last question. Bloomberg had a report today that AT&T was going to buy Time Warner.
Uh-huh.
What do you make of that?
I think if I had to pick a camp, I'd pick AT&T Investor and vote no. It's a huge deal. I mean, Time Warner is a great business. They own HBO, for example. They're worth like $62, $64 billion right now. But imagine what it's going to cost to pick them up. And AT&T is only worth so much and only has so much flexibility. So I really do understand the idea that, pipe companies want to bring on more in-house content or bring more content in-house. But this deal was huge. And it's a lot bigger than the Verizon AOL or the Verizon Yahoo deal that has some, that have similar overtones. This would be massive. It would be a reordering of AT&T's business, I think. And so to see AT&T share price decline and to see Time Warner's go up, I think is the right reaction by the market. It'd be great to see a premium thrown on the Time Warner stock. It'd be a huge bullet for AT&T to swallow. So I would be cautious, but I'm not surprised given the current market climate.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Alex is the editor-in-chief at Mattermark.
I even wore my shirt today for you guys. Oh. I had these.
Well, you can kind of see it in the, you can see it better here. We got it right here.
And you wrote all about Microsoft. You write the best financial funny tweets out there. And so check out mattermark.com/blog for Alex's work or find him on Twitter at Alex.
That's correct.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Talk to you soon. Nicholas Murrow wrote in response to our discussion of Samsung setting up airport kiosks to help people return their Galaxy Note 7 while at the airport. Nicholas found a job posting for the position on Facebook looking for friendly reps to exchange Note 7s for those that are stuck at the airport with another one. For 1 week, this team will be intercepting consumers to provide them with information and support. You know this position is right for you because you can create and foster relationships with ease. Kind of like a professional friend maker. You have a bright and bubbly personality. You love getting people excited, and you have a chameleonistic nature about you. The job pays $18 an hour plus a $2 an hour completion bonus. What I want to know is why only for a week? That seems like such a short amount of time. You're
Well, it seems like people, if you haven't figured it out by then, it's not Samsung's
fault. I don't think but it really is. It's in Samsung's best interest to make sure that all of these, like there are no more people get thrown off airplanes because they have a note. Like they need to erase any mention of this in mm-hmm. the press. So I think it kind of is partially Samsung's fault.
Well, I think they're setting up at the airport for people who flew before the recall and have to get back. That's my opinion. Really, at this point, like, how could you not know? Like, a week from now, how could you not know that your phone that you bought, you can't take on an airplane?
But people do it anyways. Even if they know they're going to try.
Right. Well, then those people, they're not trying to help those people. Yeah, you know, true.
Help those people.
Yeah. But I mean, I just love this job description. It's just like a professional friend maker. Like they really, and a chameleonistic nature, like to take someone's phone and put their information on and hand them whatever else they're going to get in return. So thank you, Nicholas.
Frosted Cookies in the chat room says you have eyes on the side of your head and can lick them. So you're chameleonistic in nature.
Also, you don't mind handling a phone that might explode in your hand. That wasn't part of the job description.
It's powered down. That makes it safe, right? Right? Right?
Right.
That's what I was told.
After the break, the Nintendo Switch is coming in March. Sam Moscovich is here to tell us what he thinks. But first, let's take a minute to thank Casper, the sponsor of this episode. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. Casper's mattresses are obsessively engineered and they come at a fair price. They combine two technologies, springy latex foam and supportive memory foam, to create an award-winning sleep surface and just the right sink and just the right bounce. Casper Mattress is a 2016 Business Intelligence Group Innovation Award winner. It provides long-lasting comfort and support, breathable design, so you can sleep cool and help regulate your temperature through the night. Now, I have a Casper mattress. My twins have a Casper mattress. They love it. We love it. It's soft and comfortable. You can buy it easily online, and it's completely risk-free. Try sleeping on a Casper mattress. Casper understands the importance of really trying it out for yourself. You don't want to believe me. You want to sit on it. You want to lay on it. You want to roll around it. You want to sleep on it, and you can for 100 days. then you don't have to lie on down in a showroom because that's not going to tell you anything. You have 100 days to sleep on it. It's engineered to meet the Goldilocks standard of just right, so it's not too hard and not too soft. And they also uphold the highest environmental production standards and are made in the USA. Free shippings and free returns if you don't like it to the US and Canada. Get a Casper mattress today, $500 for a twin, $950 for a king size. Compare that to industry average. It's an outstanding price. You can also save $50 towards a mattress purchase. Go to Casper.com/TNT. Don't just go to Casper.com. Go to Casper.com/TNT. Enter the promo code TNT. Casper.com/TNT. Promo code TNT. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we've heard about the Nintendo NX console in bits and pieces for months now, started with Nintendo itself months ago, and now Nintendo has unshackled its newest console. Joining us to talk all about it is Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica. How's it going, Sam?
Hello, hello. It is going Nintendo crazy for me today, so I'm really happy you guys caught me.
Excellent. We are too.
Because whenever there's Nintendo news, I can't get sleep the night before. It is Christmas for me. Anytime the Big N shouts that Mario is about to bring something into my stocking. And today, Nintendo did not disappoint with the reveal of the Nintendo Switch. Now, I don't know what you guys were already talking about. I was actually just writing another fan letter to my Nintendo Fun Club newsletter. But for if you did not catch the reveal this morning and you hadn't seen most of the rumors and news that had leaked before, the Nintendo Switch for, gosh, almost a year has been known as the Nintendo NX. It was the code name for a brand new home/portable system, a home portable hybrid. And the news leaks that came out suggested pretty much everything we saw today. A 6.2-inch screen, give or take, we don't know the exact figure yet, that has controllers that can either stick to the screen or can be taken off of the screen. Now, you can be at your house using these little two paddles, which are called the Joy-Cons. Joystick controller, it's a strange shrinking of the name. But these little Joy-Cons can either stick to the screen, can be attached to a little dock that then you can – appears to be a charging sort of unit that actually charges these little small paddles, or can be held one at a time and handed to multiple friends so that two people per system can each hold their own little controller, which at that point becomes a little bit smaller, more like a Super Nintendo controller with a joystick on one side – and the A, B, X, Y buttons on the other. In fact, it's sort of clever. If you are looking at the screen and you're seeing this video, you're seeing the left hand and the right hand are essentially the same buttons, but instead of having that old style D-pad, that little cross, you have four little circle buttons on both sides. So what would be a D-pad on one hand becomes the A, B, X, Y. Anyway, this video reveal shows a bunch of 20-somethings clearly not happy enough with their lives. When they're doing a thing, they have to be playing a video game related to it. They going to the go-kart track is not enough. They need to take a break between go-kart laps to play Mario Kart. Shooting basketball at the court? Nah, it's halftime. We need to play NBA 2K. At a table and take a break. It's a very peculiar video that's, I guess, trying to make it really clear how cool you can be while using this thing. But it also showcases the fact that you can have multiple systems very close to each other and they will play nicely, which actually could be really cool in terms of two people, one each having their own system, having these screens sort of back to back, each person seeing what the other person can't. However, the games that were shown were all sort of preliminary early ideas. We had Mario Kart and Splatoon. These are games that already were on the Wii U, and they looked a lot like the Wii U versions, but slightly different. Mario Kart had two items in the item slot instead of one, which all the gamer freaks freaked out about, which is just to say that clearly Nintendo didn't just take old footage and slap it on. They made brand new footage of existing games just to make people go, oh, it's slightly different. And Splatoon being a multiplayer shooter that was quite good on the Wii U, but not enough people played because the Wii U didn't do that well. Now, remember, the Nintendo NX, which is now the Nintendo Switch, is essentially Nintendo's last stab at getting people to care about hardware. We're in an era now where everyone has their own smartphone, not necessarily rushing out to get a DS or a Game Boy or a Wii and so on. The competition for these devices is increasing, whether because you're someone at the house who already has an Apple TV or you're someone on the go who already has an iPhone and an Xbox. Where does Nintendo fit in? This system is very strange. Do you guys have any questions? I don't know if you guys looked at it as carefully as I did.
Well, I mean...
No one did, Sam.
No, this is why we bring you on, because you look at this in intense detail, and we love it. So you mentioned that the games that you see here, you've kind of already seen before. What does that say about the capabilities of the system itself? I mean, this is a next gen to the previous gen, right? So you would expect games that push the platform forward a little bit.
So there were a couple of other games I forgot to mention, which is a brand new Legend of Zelda game, which will also be on the Wii U.
I like the visual kind of aspect of it. It's very different.
And I had played that on the Wii U, the older hardware, and it's clear that this newer hardware is handling that more smoothly. This is an open world Zelda, so there's a lot of view distance, a lot more stuff going on visually. So clearly this is running at least a little better than the Wii U. And we don't know exact details other than the fact that NVIDIA is providing a little chip in there, the Tegra. The Tegra is powering some of NVIDIA's portable products already, the X1 generation of that one, which is to say it will run some older games. And the Half-Life and Portal games were actually ported to Android and use the NVIDIA Tegra to play an Android version of some of these 3D games, which is to say it's a perfectly fine portable 3D chip. It'll power more by default than your smartphone might. But that's not much compared to the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Now, remember, this is a portable system. You are playing it at the house. You pick it up out of that little dock, and then you play it elsewhere, and it's supposed to be the exact same game. There's no pause. There's no stutter. Nintendo really emphasized this portability. So this chip has to work well on the go. And that's a question mark we have, is are you going to get more power when you have it docked to a television than when you take it out and go on the road? Is there a resolution difference and a buff when you're at the house? That doesn't seem to be the case. Nintendo has made a couple of statements saying that this little home dock is just for convenience for plugging into your TV. It's not going to add extra boosts, which is to say this Tegra chip, there's a lot more questions than answers. We don't know exactly its clock speed, the number of CUDA cores, which is one of these counts that video card freaks really love, all these kinds of technical specifications that are going to tell us exactly how this compares to the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. My guess is this is going to at best match the Xbox One. And Xbox and PlayStation are already kind of moving on. We've got the Project Scorpio from Microsoft. We have PlayStation 4 Pro from Sony. So Nintendo is already getting left behind technologically. That we did see Skyrim and NBA 2K. These are pretty photorealistic at times, big games, either because they're showing NBA athletes' faces or giant dragons and mountainsides in Skyrim. So there's clearly going to be 3D gaming that should be at least as good as the Wii U, if not better. My guess is better, because I don't know that Wii U could have run Skyrim. Although it was really weird today, Bethesda, who makes Skyrim, actually made a statement saying, we don't know if Skyrim's coming out on the Nintendo Switch, which everyone's like, what? Why did you give Skyrim to Nintendo to show on the Switch and say it's not coming on the Switch? So, God, there's a lot more questions than answers.
So I have a question for you. Do you imagine yourself like taking this to all the many roof parties you attend in Seattle, like we saw in the promotional video? Like, is this something you can really imagine taking out in the world and playing with others?
All that footage was me in with all of my different friends and all of my different outfits. That is the life I lead with my portable gaming. I just really love the woman at the party who goes to the party. She's playing Mario. And then as soon as she gets to the party, she's just middle fingers to y'all. I'm going back to it's just a strange thing. It was a strange demonstration. But I do think that a Nintendo system, if it's going to be underpowered in a portable age, in an age in which I expect my technology to go with me and in which perfectly good 3D processing can be shrunken down, I'm a 3DS kind of guy. I like portable gaming. So I kind of like this as a grown-up way of saying I still have my Game Boy that can play legitimate, high-speed, high-fidelity 3D games. So, you know, if it's running at a lower resolution but is still cranking out stuff that looks kind of like Xbox One, and more importantly, plays at the same level as Xbox One. You know, if I could play Red Dead Revolver 2 or Battlefield 1, if I could play pared-down versions of those on the go on a nice, comfortable Nintendo kit and be able to snap the extra controller off, hand that to a buddy when I'm out and about and be like, we're doing two-player now, bro. That's kind of a cool idea. But again, I got to see that in execution. I don't know if it's going to be that powerful. It may, the battery life may stink. The RAM may not be enough. The controllers may be super uncomfortable. Those little ones, when you snap them
off, they do kind of look a little uncomfortable when they're, especially when they're snapped off.
Yeah. Have you, as a grown up, used the old NES controller? It is much smaller than you remember because these seem even smaller than that with the things off center. So it's just like, Nintendo, I'm not quite sure what you're doing, but you're going to have a new Mario game, so I'm going to come along for the ride to at least some extent.
And I think that's the exact mentality like that works for a lot of people, people who have history with Nintendo.
But you know what's not going to work for a lot of people? It doesn't appear to have a touchscreen.
Right, that was
nothing
my next question.
Nothing in the video shows anybody touching it. And so we reached out to Nintendo and said, hey, is there going to be touch? And they said, we have no answer to that question at this time. Stay tuned. What? That's not even – if you can go on Alibaba right now and mass order capacitive touch panels for these kinds of screens for like $2 a pop. That's a simple answer, yes or no. Yeah. Can you touch it? Unless they're about to reveal some incredible, crazy touch interface, the video and the sort of analysis I did make it clear that touch is not going to be primary. This is not going to be a touch system. This is not going to be a Wii remote wagging your hand around system. This is not going to be an interface gimmick system. The gimmick is that you take it out of the house and that it's high performance on the road, supposedly. The gimmick is not how you touch it, how you control it, how you tap it. Old school buttons. But I just think the lack of anybody just tap it, hit the power button, hit, you know, okay on the screen. It would be such a simple thing. And I think a lot of hardcore gamers will go, great, I hated the waggle. I hate these gimmicks. But I really think that there's a big segment of the audience that's going to look at this and go, why would I get a touchscreen why would I get something that looks like a tablet that I can't touch? Why do I need another device cluttering my life that isn't going to do everything? If I could just get this one thing that I can hand to my kid, tap for Netflix and tap for this and do all these things, I think this is going to be a big pain in the butt for Nintendo coming down the road unless they turn around and make it really clear that they've got touch. But the game's for sure one screen kind of gaming, and you have to be able to play it on the couch, meaning if you don't have the screen in your hands. So do not expect anything more like the DS or the Wii U, in which touch was an integral part of some of Nintendo's most creative games. It's a weird move, and unless they have another DS coming down the line, or unless they're really going to push forward with more smartphone touch kind of gaming, this could be the end of a touch era or just a completely different kind. It's a surprising question mark. I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, no kidding. Sam Moscovich, love your energy with all of this, all the gaming news, and especially with Nintendo, because I feel you. I want to play this. I've got questions, though, and I'm sure, you know, the minute it's out, you're going to be playing it, and you'll have answers to those questions, so thank you.
Supposedly, it's still coming in March, and maybe before then, we'll find out a price and what games will be on it. They did announce partners and things, but you're right. I'm too excited. I'm going to go light some candles. I'm going to light some candles, sit in the bath, and have some pleasant Mario dreams.
Excellent. Sam Moscovich, Ars Technica, always a pleasure. At Sam Red on Twitter. Thanks, man.
See you guys.
All right. Have a good night.
TNT's fan of the day is Les Sharma on Twitter, who sent us this video saying he's watching with my kids from the lovely white cliffs of Dover.
He's watching with his kids.
Yeah, he's not watching with
That'd be weird if he was watching with your kids. They're all just kind of hanging out in the living room. And what do you know? Boom. There you are, Megan, on the big screen in the living room. Excellent. It's a family affair.
Yes. We need to remember to keep it family friendly, I guess.
I think we do an okay job of that.
Most of the time.
Most of the time.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Record a video. Take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
Up next, Joey from Friends. You remember him? He's going to drop by the show. And yeah, it's totally him. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. With advancements in technology, we have all sorts of smart things in our life. We talk about them on the show all the time. Smart cars, smart phones, smart homes. But then you lose something and then you feel, well, not so smart. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, computers, backpacks, bicycles, even pets in seconds. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. These things can take a beating. You can easily attach it to your items with a key loop or adhesive. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts up to 1 year. You can add a laser engraved message to each tracker Bravo, like return or pet information. You can even personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. And you can use your imagination. Put anything on there. Pair tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with the tap of a button. And, I mean, it's really just that easy. Your phone is going to be able to track up to 10 devices at once. You can customize two-way separation alerts so you're notified before your item is left behind. If you lose your phone in the other direction, you can press the button on the tracker and your phone's going to ring even if it was left on silent. Tracker Atlas works with your Tracker Bravo or third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a customizable floor plan of your home. So you can save time and energy by simply asking Tracker Atlas where your item is and you'll instantly get an answer. No need to search. You'll just know that it's there under the couch cushions. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your lost item is going to show up on a map even if it's miles away. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on that map. And then when another tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's thetracker.com. Promo code TNT for 30% off your entire Tracker order. And we thank Tracker for their support. All right, AI can do incredible things. Case in point, researchers at the University of Leeds have analyzed and deconstructed 236 episodes of Friends, the TV show, to create language models of the characters in an attempt to recreate those characters synthetically. In the case of the project, Joey was recreated based on all of his spoken dialogue, and when asked to generate dialogue that Joey might say, the system came back with phrases like, "Dude, I don't care," and "I like pizza and cheese." Not only does the AI create new phrases based on those models, it also catalogs and reproduces the mouth movements that tie into those phrases, ultimately recreating a line in a scene that never happened. The result is, well, I mean, we have video of the results. This is kind of how it's learning and setting up. I wouldn't say that the result is super convincing. Right after this, it's going to show you an example of Joey talking, so you can pop the audio up here. And here we go. This is "Dude, I don't care."
Dude, I don't care.
And this, okay, we're going to do that again. Here's "Dude, I don't care." Not very convincing, little choppy. But I mean, you have to imagine, like,
I like pizza with cheese.
It's very, it gets in you.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
It's very rough, right? Like, you can see that the mouth was pulled from all of these different places throughout the course of the episodes and sandwiched on. The audio was chopped from all these different places. But you have to imagine this type of application only leads to something much more believable down the line. We probably won't have to wait too long for this to happen. So Leo has always said, what we need to do is we need to analyze all of these episodes so that when I'm not doing the shows anymore, mm-hmm. I can be brought on in a virtual sense. This is the beginning of that.
This
right here.
Yeah. This is the stuff of my nightmares. That is so disturbing. But yes, we should totally do that with Leo because he's been talking about how he wants to take more vacation and we can't do it alone, Jason. So absolutely. Yes. Yeah. The way they phrase it, though, it's like they're resurrecting it. Like,
yeah.
As if you can really like resurrect. I mean, you know, they might do it for us and then people might be able to watch Leo in, you know, 100 years.
Uh-huh. I mean, we really only have a couple of camera shots here. I think the challenge with Friends is that they've analyzed all these scenes that are taken in a million different framing scenes or whatever. You and I or Leo on a set, like, we're always just kind of looking at the camera. Mm-hmm. It would be the easiest thing to replicate. Seriously, it would not be difficult. I'm guessing, of course, I didn't create the AI that does this, but I'm guessing in 5 years' time, this is going to be super easy.
We should totally do it, and then we can take more vacations.
Well, I'm going to be gone for a week, but don't worry, my virtual self will be here.
Love it.
I think that's the future.
Yeah.
This is going to happen, folks. Mm-hmm. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
You can also listen to us on Amazon's Flash Briefing on your Amazon Echo. Every day you get updates on the latest tech news from Leo and Jason and myself. To hear Twit's Flash Briefing, go to the settings in your app, search for Twit, and then subscribe. It's a great way to start your morning. Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, tell me how to make an AI of myself so I can take a longer vacation, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Alex for slumming it today on the prompter. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.
I like pizza and cheese.